Want consistent color for every job? Mylow's Pro Rewards members get a 20% paint discount on future purchases after paint annual qualifying spend reaches $3,000. Plus, order eligible in-stock paint and paint supplies by 2 p.m. for free same-day delivery by 8 p.m. Improving is easy at Lowe's. Excludes spray paint and mist tints. More exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Subject to change. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Same-day delivery valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. Details at Lowe's.com/same-day-delivery.
Degrassi alumni, guess who is here? It's us. It's the Degrads guys. Your hosts, Shane Kipple, Gavin Spinner-Mason.
And myself, Mike Lobel, a.k.a. Jay Hogarth. I've been watching Toast of London. I don't know if you know that show with Matt Berry.
I've heard of it.
It's hilarious. It's very absurdist, and that's the way he would say Jay Hogarth. Anyways, welcome to Degrads. Degrads is a show where Shane and I get to watch Degrassi for the first time, because you would think that we would have seen all the episodes having been on the show, but that is not true. So we are being surprised along with a rewatch just as you are. Although actually most of you have probably already seen it.
I would think so. I don't think you would become a fan of Degrads if you hadn't already had a previous connection.
Yeah, we're trying to promote this little show. It's called Degrassi.
It's brand new. You'll love it.
Totally new.
It's a beautiful day here in Toronto. I think we're finally coming out of the horrible winter that we've had. And it's also bright and early right now, and I am not ashamed to say this is my third cup of coffee.
Damn.
Yeah.
Like a real
and
pilot.
Look at the hair.
Dude,
look at the hair
it
coming
is
in.
Like, it's wild.
I had my first haircut yesterday since it was shaved for the transplant. Which is already 3.5 months ago. Crazy to think about.
Wow.
I don't think it's supposed to look this good in the camera. Like,
I do say so myself.
If I was to float my own boat. It's not supposed to start looking good until about 6 months. So I'm at, just over half of that mark.
Epic results,
good.
Man.
Pretty,
that's good. I'm glad you're feeling good about it, Shane. That's
thank you.
That's
appreciate
awesome.
It.
Awesome to hear.
A little compliment from you every so often would be nice too. But yeah, I'll just take care of it on my own.
Well, I'm wearing a hat because I couldn't seem to make it work today.
Listen, the only reason I got a hair transplant was so I could have hair akin to yours.
All right, folks, this right, episode, today we are covering Karma Chameleon Season 2, Episode 4, and yes, we've reverted to the other way of scoring episode names numerically. This episode is about that moment when you realize that fitting in to your friend group might cost a little something extra. Might cost who you are, actually.
Yeah.
Take us back, Shane. What was going on when it was released?
We're going to skip over the time capsule portion because nothing changed. We
Perfect.
Know what the top songs were. We know what the movies were. We know what the shows were.
Okay, I'm trying to think about where I was in this very moment.
October 13th, 2002 is when this
2002,
episode came
October.
Out. Yeah.
So I would have been gearing up for Halloween and I would have been 17, maybe 16. I probably would have been planning a Halloween party with my friends. I probably would have had my costume dialed in, and it was most likely some version of the devil. I loved putting those, those horns that you like paste on and then the makeup and you do the whole thing.
Yeah. Devil horns. Yeah.
Plus it was that age where, we were all planning on trying to figure out how to get alcohol underage and plan a big house party.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Wait,
none of that went on in Shane Kipple's group of friends. We were responsible.
Right. Yeah.
It was all non-alcoholic. And we were definitely only smoking the Popeyes.
The Popeyes cigarettes and non-alcoholic.
Until we were
zero.
Legal age.
Yeah, Corona Zeros.
Exactly.
Totally. You just like the flavor.
Yeah. Where it was root beer and yeah. we would put a piece of tape over the root and then look at us. That was us.
Lighting those Popeye cigarettes. Disgusting.
Exactly.
This episode's called Karma Chameleon, which is a song by Culture Club. It came out in 1983. It sounds really bright and bouncy, right? But it's actually about somebody who changes their colors depending on who they're with. Mm. If you're not authentic, if you keep shape-shifting to get by, karma catches up to you. So that's basically, which is essentially the episode in a nutshell, because this is Ashley's story.
Yeah, it is. But I don't think it, like, Ashley wasn't really changing her colors to fit in. I think she really wanted to apologize to get
it. Terry who was changing her color. And to a certain extent, I think Paige as well. Like everybody's kind of jostling around to see there's some in-group, out-group politics happening here.
Yeah, but what I really did enjoy about this episode, and hopefully this is just a sign of things to come, is it's starting to feel like a real group of people. Mm-hmm. You know, less of a performance, and now the characters have taken on a life of their own, and they're dependable in the way that they do things. Yeah, it's starting to feel like a real school and not everyone establishing themselves.
You're right. And I don't know whether that's down to the writing or the show's conception or whether it's just that you and I have spent a lot of time with them.
That's what I mean. It's the familiarity of us with the show and the actors, the characters, sorry. Mm-hmm. And then us as the actors on the show at that time, we're starting to feel more comfortable with the roles that we were in.
And I think you can see that.
Yes.
I think there's probably for actors, young actors especially, there's probably a time where you're just feeling out like, okay, who is this character? You're trying to embody the character and you're getting clues from each script, but the more information you have, the more you start to understand what it means for your portrayal.
And technical acting as well, to be able to convey what you need to convey in your performance while hitting your mark, working with the camera, right? So,
I mean, it's not all about hitting our marks, but Shane, I'm sure you can attest, we always got called out for not hitting our marks.
For those of you in the autofocus era, just know, and in film, I'm sure it's all still manual, but if you missed your mark, if you were too close or too far away or a little off of center of the frame, for the most part, that whole take would be scrapped. But you're dealing with a technical department, the crew, that is like 80 moving parts. And if you continuously mess up because everyone's unionized, then you can push the entire day back by a quarter of an hour. And then that means every single person there needs to be paid for an extra quarter of an hour in overtime.
Yeah.
So it might not seem like much, but it could cost the production an extra $30,000 if you go 1 minute over your target time frame of the day. So
you better hit your mark and get that, squeak that tear out, because.
And you better not show up late to work.
A huge no-no. There is no late. There's no sick days. I mean, we're getting on a tangent and we'll cover that.
I got
horribly sick once while making the show, and I'm going to point it out. I've never seen that episode, by the way, so I'm really excited to get into that.
But that was when you were your unexplained absence, and I don't think you ever came back after that. They don't deal with sickness. You're just done. They take you out behind the shed, and anyway.
No, I was hospitalized, and
I know.
But still, they were like calling the hospital. When's my coming back?
You can now, so many years later, admit that you were just hungover for a few days, Mike.
Yeah,
it's
really
fine.
Hungover.
We all know.
Well,
you're
I was being bad, and that's the reason I got sick in the first place. So I do feel bad about that. But
all right, so let's get to the episode.
Let's get into it.
Season 2, Episode 4, Karma Chameleon, came out October 13th, 2000. The writers of this episode were Aaron Martin and Shelley Scarrow with the story, and Claire Rostun with the teleplay, and director making another appearance, love the man, Stephen Skaney.
We open this episode on Paige, Hazel, and Jimmy and spinner in tow, hyping up a retro roller skating party. Tight satin shorts, we're there, say Jimmy and Spinner.
Yeah.
And yes, they're the boys high five. It's this like took me back to that era. Like it's the American Pie era, right? Like this is the mind of teenage boys. Ashley overhears and tries to jump in, but Paige immediately calls her out on the house party meltdown that she had in the previous season.
Mm-hmm.
But Ashley is desperate. It was one mistake. I want my friends back, she says. Mm-hmm. She is determined. Roll the credits.
And I think that it speaks to that era of everyone's time on this earth. In high school, yeah, it's one mistake, but one mistake defines you in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And you like to think that maybe we've come quite a distance from that time, but in this day and age, online even, one mistake can, it might be unforgivable no matter what you do. And there's a school of thought for both sides of that coin. But in high school, your reputation is done in a flash.
It's really true. And I might get in trouble for saying this from some fellow alumni, but I went to an art school, which is funny because people on I read some Reddit comments and they were like, Mike sounds pretentious. He sounds like a pretentious theater school kid. And you know why that is? Because I am a pretentious theater school kid. So the art school that I went to, everybody was very artistic and it felt incredibly open and progressive and accepting. And I know someone whose child is going to this school and had to move because they are being bullied. And I just thought like, oh my God, not my high school, the high school, you know, like, so even in the most progressive environments, the kids are still hurting each other. They're still like teasing. There's still bullying going on. I thought, what is going on?
Mm-hmm. I think it's just a microcosm, an early exposure for everybody in life to understand that when you're part of a community, no matter what age, there are some people that will continuously in one way or another be bullied and other people that will always do the bullying.
Yeah.
It doesn't stop when high school is over.
No, it gets formalized.
Exactly.
In company culture. And yeah, that's true.
Exactly. Yeah.
Life. Okay, we are back in class. Paige meets Ellie for the first time, and so do we. Hi, Ellie. Obviously played by the wonderful Stacey Farber, who, I mean, I was goth in high school, so, you know.
I was not.
I'm feeling this character.
I was so happy to see her show up in Schitt's Creek when I was watching through that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like a heartbreaking character. That, you know, trying to hunt down her fiance who then falls in love with David Rose, Dan Levy. But still, hi, Stacey. It's been way too long.
Hi, Stacey. Yeah. I found this old video footage of like from like my camcorder footage because I brought my camcorder to set a bunch of times. And yeah, we're just being ridiculous.
By the way, the camcorder is like a boombox version of a cell phone camera.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
You have to carry it on your shoulder. Yeah.
Love those cameras. Okay, so Paige asks Ellie to move so that Hazel can sit there because that's Hazel's seat. Mm-hmm. Ellie doesn't budge. I kind of love her already.
Yeah, immediately making her mark. Setting the tone for what kind of character she is. Not a pushover.
Ashley approaches Paige to apologize. I was the real hag. Ooh.
Mm.
Paige. She's actually considering it in this moment. She hears that.
While I do like that, and it is film, so things have to move a little bit quicker than they do in real life. I found it to be a little quick of a turning of the tide for someone who's so set in her ways like mm-hmm. Paige.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it could speak to adolescence and you being very mad at someone and then they apologize. You're like, what was I really mad about? But I thought that Paige would need a little bit more winning over, which she does throughout the episode. But even in that first moment, also Ellie just budging her way in there, like,
yeah,
having no context on what happened over there, but just enjoying that this girl that's already annoying her, someone else called her a hag the year before.
I called it right.
Also, the eye rolls by Lauren and by Andrea.
Andrea's
Hazel.
Eye roll is a 10 out of 10.
I felt the world spin a little bit quicker with that on. Yeah.
Andrea is, she's a phenomenal actor, but we don't get really that much of a sense of her in this episode. What she does with the little time she's on screen in this episode is so powerful.
That was
one of those moments I was like, whoa.
Yeah. She is in essence right now, Paige's hype man. She is always there for
yeah. She's like the Terry in season one to Ashley.
Exactly.
At this point.
Yeah, very much so. Because both of them get continuously thrown under the bus.
Under the bus. Yeah.
By their best friends.
Yeah. 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 So Paige considers it for a second. Mm-hmm. Back in the hallway, JT, Toby, and Emma are debating anime like it's some underground concept that nobody's heard of until this point, which I guess maybe the West hadn't really heard about this.
I am no expert on anime. I'm no authority to speak on it. So if anyone knows, if it hadn't quite broken into Western zeitgeist yet.
Yeah, let us know.
I thought you would have known more about anime.
Well, I'm looking at my bookshelf right now. The closest thing I have to anime, and this is pretty far off, is like Uzumaki by Jinju Ito, which is, it's like horror, but it's similar style. It's just horror.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking over at my bookshelf and I'm realizing I don't have a bookshelf.
We got to get you a bookshelf.
I have plenty of books, but I got no shelf and definitely no anime or graphic novels. So,
we're going to fix that.
All right.
JT says that it's for geeks, anime. Emma pushes back. She's like, actually, it's like really popular and it's quite good.
And then Toby tries to bond with her and she's like, I said I know it. I didn't say I like it, nerd.
Yeah. This was a funny little combo.
And then they ran off to Craig.
Yeah. And then they run off to Craig. And Manny adds, girls aren't that into that stuff. And she swoons and leaves. And the funny thing is how poorly that aged, because a lot of girls love anime and it's not gender specific.
But a lot of girls also love Jake Epstein. So that part aged well. Why did Emma still run over there like she was, you know, still swooning over him?
Wing lady.
Openly.
She was wing lading. Maybe. I don't know, because in the last episode at the dance, it was Manny. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So that was just last episode. So when Manny runs over, now that's her territory. So Emma shouldn't be looking at him with doe eyes right in Manny's presence, right?
It's a little strange, but I'm starting to get the sense that like the idea of relationship territory at Degrassi is quite fluid from episode to episode, because things like that I thought would make some characters upset are kind of like, what do you mean? No big deal. And then other characters are getting upset because they think they're in a relationship still with somebody and they're not.
Yeah, I have some things to say about that as we get into the episode as well. So yeah,
high school scene. Confusing. Toby Forlorn declares he'll become the first Jewish monk. Gregorian chant music punchline.
Loved it.
I liked how they were using music as a punchline in this episode. Mm-hmm. And that kind of signals to us like this episode is going to skew more comedy and a little bit lighter in the B plot, especially.
Stephen Skaney was great for episodes like that.
Yeah. In science class, Spinner cannot focus because Miss Hatzilakos, a new character,
Melissa DeMarco,
fantastic actor, and Melissa event. She was a host. She hosted a bunch of things after as well. She became a host.
She hosted things before as well, which is where I knew her from. She had a segment on one of I think Ontario's local channels called Nightlight. It came on after That's Married right. with Children and before David Letterman, and it was a 7-minute segment. She was doing like street interviews, essentially, right?
About Toronto culture, right?
About Toronto culture, exactly, yeah.
And I would look at it and I'd see all the older people like going to the clubs and the restaurants and doing and be like, wow, what's that like?
And it was very trendy. It was very new age. Like the camera angles were coming skewed, at her on
they
angles.
Were askance, and she wore this cool, like really slick leather jacket. And
She was cool. She was cool. Shit. Yeah.
She was cool. I was very,
yeah.
She was cool. Yeah. Ashley apologizes to Jimmy. I mean, really, really apologizes this time. Finally. She even says she spent the summer in counseling. So she's apologized and she's showing that she's doing something about it. Jimmy softens. He missed her. It's a sweet moment.
It is. But once again, very quick, very quick. I've been doing work on myself, Jimmy. And he's like, yeah, I mean, I miss you, Ash. And then Spinner is not sold by this at all as he's lingering in the background there. I was also surprised that there was no moment in my notes over here in the very first scene of the episode where the gang are walking up to the school and Ashley falls flat on her face trying to apologize or invite herself to Paige's party. Jimmy was there and they had no moment. So like, where was that? Yeah. Now they have the moment, but it was very short lived. And then as we'll see the next time he talks about it, he's like, we had a really good discussion. We're cool now. I'm like that.
And we've been hearing this, right, Shane, from fans for so long that the consistency, the connectivity between these relationship arcs are sometimes wonky on the show.
It gets better. It gets better down the line, but I think everyone was still trying to
manage. You know. Yeah. And also I think the writers have a really tough time balancing all the characters out and then also having to track all of them through new storylines, new issues, new things coming up all the time that it's really hard to do that. I mean, this feels like a huge, a massive puzzle.
And even if they had it all, you know, mapped out on a whiteboard in the writer's room, they still need to be able to make time for that in every episode. So if a group of friends meets another group of friends and there's some sort of twisted love triangle or square, something going on where there has to be, there's the main scene going on and then there's some awkward, you know, tension between two of the other characters, you would have to give them close-ups and establish that as well. And in a 22-minute episode, you just wouldn't have time for all of that. So it's very complicated. I think it's easier to do now with streaming services when you don't have to worry about commercials or specific episode times.
True. Meanwhile, Toby's looking for a anime CD-ROM. I think it's like an anime how to draw anime.
A CD what?
Sorry? A CD-ROM.
What's that?
Dude. Man, this is before your time. There was a point you had to put a disc into the computer. Actually, I remember 3 1/4. There's one. How do you even still have that? Yeah, CD-ROM. Enter Kendra Mason. Spinners. Adopted
sister.
Younger sister. Played
by. We don't know that yet.
We don't know that yet.
We just know it's a new character.
Played by the fabulous Katie Lai.
Hey, Katie. That's 24 years ago now.
Oh, my God. Oh, my gosh. I guess Toby recognizes another anime fan, another kindred spirit in Kendra. And I think he swoons. She likes anime. He walks into a wall.
You're right.
I wonder if that was in the script.
I would assume so.
You think so?
If it wasn't, amazing move, Jake. But I would think he walked into that wall. Yeah.
I was wondering. I was like, is this like an on the set? Is this a Stephen Skaney thing? Is this a Jake thing?
I don't know. You're saying, I thought you meant, was it just an accident?
No. I mean, I know it was staged, but I just wonder if it was in the script.
There's a way to do that very corny and campy. And Jake did it like a pro.
It was so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Paige still isn't sold on forgiving Ashley. Jimmy and Hazel are leaning to yes, mm-hmm. because it was sincere enough for them. Hazel even suggests that maybe Paige should just let it go. She mm-hmm. apologized after all.
Yeah, and Ashley and Jimmy had a great talk, and they're back together now. Whatever.
Well, and this is the confusion that I'm having in this episode, which is obviously the confusion a lot of people are having, but he returned right. her things. That is, to me, seems like a clear end to the relationship.
That's right, yeah, and they haven't spoken since.
And an apology on top of that doesn't mean explicitly like, hey, we're back on. That's another conversation.
Exactly, especially in a conversation that lasted maybe 30 seconds, and unless we're supposed to imagine that they went on to speak more after the cameras moved on to something else at that point. But maybe. If he's just talking about that one little back and forth that they had, not really enough to say, like, we talked it out. We're cool now. Like, I don't know. She cheated. Maybe it's just me because of recent events in my life, but I would not be that forgiving that quick.
But even if you were, there's still no agreement as to whether or not they're on again. And it was just an apology. Like,
that's
he's
right.
reading
yeah.
a lot into an apology is all I'm saying.
That's true. That's true.
In the cafeteria with Spinner's favorite cafeteria worker,
Sheila.
Ashley's short a dollar. Her credits run out. Sean steps in, saved by the knight in shining denim.
Mm-hmm.
I should have yeah. worn my denim jacket.
Must have been a new jacket with Scotch Guard on it.
Ashley and Sean agree to be friends. At least Ashley does. And Craig kind of like comes in and out of a bunch of conversations at
he
the
does.
End of conversations in this episode. He's yeah. always kind of like lurking in the background, waiting to come in and be like, you sure about that?
Yeah, yeah.
Craig subtly suggests that Sean may be like, hey, like, you know, I saw that go down. Maybe mm-hmm. you want to shoot your shot here. Mm-hmm. Like, it seems like she's into you.
I love watching shows with ensemble casts where someone is the hero of one story, and then in the next story, they become the ally, or they become the wise man, or, yeah. or whatever else.
Yeah.
And in this, Craig becomes the ally
yeah.
for everybody. I remember it wasn't until one of the later seasons there was a, I actually can't remember his name right now, but he played the owner of the Dot, and he was explaining to me the beauty of serving up a scene to somebody else. And it's a very selfless act of an actor, but it also elevates the entire project because you're not trying to steal the scene. You understand that your purpose here is to make the other character realize something mm-hmm, and bring them mm-hmm. to their eureka moment. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was Craig's part idea. In this episode.
Well said.
Yeah.
Well said. And also, I think it really helps to flesh out the dimensionality of all the characters, right? That, like, even though everyone, and we're all the hero in our own story, right? So we've all got the big A plots in our lives, the real big things we're trying to overcome, conquer, the problems we're trying to solve. But then we also show up in other people's lives. And I think that just when these characters come in and out of, like, from the big story and then become a smaller supporting role in another person's story, it just ends up making the world feel so much more genuine and real because it just imitates real life.
Mm-hmm.
In Quan's class, they're reading the Twelfth Night. They're really on a Shakespeare kick, both seasons. And I ran to the internet, you better believe it. Even though I'm a theater school Pratt, I didn't remember what the plot of the Twelfth Night was. But I'm always looking for, like, is this another metaphor? Are they trying to, like,
and was it?
Doesn't really seem to be. Ashley is late to class, however, and this is the more important thing, because Miss Kwan does not abide by late students. She gets to see me after class. And then Paige kind of swings and weirdly empathizes with Ashley, even taking a dig at Kwan on Ashley's behalf. She calls her a cow, which is...
Yeah. Hears Ashley tiptoe into the room,
yep,
but
yep,
doesn't
yep,
hear...
Yep, 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 yep.
doesn't hear that there should be a bell hung around her neck. Also, I thought when Paige had her backpack on the seat, she was saving it for Hazel. But then you see Hazel sitting next to her on the other side. So I'm like, yeah. Oh, once again, Paige is throwing Hazel under the bus because now she's cool with Ashley again. But if Hazel's there, who was Paige saving that seat for?
It's just for her bag.
Just for her bag. Yeah. Bad luck to put it on the right.
I don't know. Ashley is trying on photo day outfits with Terry, relieved to finally be apologizing. And I get it. Like, this is the weight off of her shoulders. Mm-hmm. She's feeling like $1 million. She's getting close to the sun here. The phone mm-hmm. rings. It's Sean. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine? Like, she's relieved this giant burden and then kind of deus ex machina, you know, hand of God, ring, ring, ring. Let's see how you handle this. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. let's make a mistake. She picks it up. It's Sean. Movie Friday night? Question mark. Ashley says yes. Ooh, mm-hmm. sounds like a date to me.
Definitely was, yeah.
But Terry gently suggests that maybe laying low here would be smart.
Some prudence would be
pump
advisable.
The brakes, yeah. Icarus. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. What about Jimmy? Like, what happened to Jimmy? Like, you apologize to him. Don't you think you should maybe see that through? Mm-hmm. Ashley, classic Ashley jabs back. Because I think Ashley jabs back when she feels like someone's trying to bring her down. This is the pattern I've noticed. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And when she's feeling really great and somebody tries to get her to manage her, you know, the expectations. Mm-hmm. She says, one day when guys like you, you'll understand. Oof.
Yeah.
That's gotta hurt.
Ashley operating on autopilot there, Freudian slip,
yeah.
in that moment has established herself as more marketable and just, you know.
And more desirable.
Because more
she's
desirable.
Everybody's fawning over.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe it's going to her head a little bit here.
Yeah. I think as much a part of the human condition as anything else, when it comes to depressive thoughts and negative thoughts sending you into a spiral where every new thing that happens because of the lens you're looking at the world through, it all makes sense. Yeah, no, okay, this, I'm feeling like this. Now this bad thing happened. Great. And now this bad thing happened. And someone could say, like, no, it's just the way that you're looking at things. It will turn around. The opposite is true for being overly positive.
I completely
and attracting
agree.
Attracting all of these great things. You are, you know, the higher you rise, the further you fall. It's a recipe for a disaster if you yeah. don't manage your expectations.
That's right? A really good point, Shane. I think a lot of focus is put on, and rightly so, for
positive thinking.
Yeah, negative mental states and how they feed each other. But positive mental states, just like you said, can also be a trap. Mm-hmm. It can be really, really dangerous.
Yep. Yeah.
You can really get high on your own supply.
Especially if a lot of things start snowballing to the positive in a very short period of time. It becomes a high, like you said, and you don't want to let it go. And then you fight desperately to keep it.
And then what happens?
Then you lose your
friends. Because nobody wants to lose that feeling. I'm telling you.
No, there's no feeling quite like it.
No.
No. Yeah.
I agree, man. Yeah. It's a trap. And this is why I think, you know, we try to teach humility and humbleness and like.
And moderation.
And moderation. I do remember when we started Degrassi, you know, or when Degrassi got really big. And just as a personal story, I think my parents were worried about keeping me in check a little bit. And so we'd come back from a weekend signing autographs and, you know, like wherever you and I went to Phoenix, Arizona one time, but doing the mall tours and you're being mm-hmm. inundated with just everybody is just building you up and your head mm-hmm. is just swimming and you're in that state of like exaltation for so long. And I'd got mm-hmm. home and my parents, I remember they would always, and good on them, I'd walk in the door and I'm back. They'd be like, get out there and cut the grass.
Yeah, I was going to say, all right, there's work for you in the yard.
Yeah,
go. Yeah.
And I'd be like,
do you know who I am, Mom?
No, okay. Yeah.
You're my son who's about to cut the grass. That's what it is.
That's a very good point. So, with many actors, the progression of your career is you're working, usually, run of the mill job, something that you don't really enjoy. You're in retail, you're working in restaurants, something as you're auditioning, and then you start to build your career, and one day maybe you don't have to work those side hustles anymore. But with me, Degrassi being my first real job, in life, acting and in life, then afterwards I started working in restaurants, and to work in restaurants after being a child actor and then go back to Cameo on Degrassi and now understand the difference between those two worlds. Mm-hmm. It really does.
It messes with you.
I have a good friend of mine was in a band that was doing very well. They were called Neverest, and they were produced by Howie from the Backstreet Boys. And he told me he was a fellow. He worked at the Keg, not the same location, but for any of you that don't know the Keg, it's a steakhouse chain in Canada, very reputable.
Great.
We worked at different locations, but we were friends. Backstreet Boys did a Canadian tour. New Kids on the Block were opening for Backstreet Boys. Neverest was opening the whole thing. So on Friday night, he's playing to 10,000 people. And then on Sunday, he's back serving tables again.
Yeah.
And he's just like, what it does to you.
Yeah. It's whiplash.
Really is. Yeah.
And I've been there too, man. I went, I always liked, because I'm a theater. I'm going to just keep doing this bit.
Yeah.
I come from the theater and I roll my R's, and I worked at a bunch of theaters. I actually worked at Princess of Wales Theater in Toronto as an usher, just because I wanted to see the shows. And believe me, I have Phantom of the Opera pretty much 100% memorized at this point. And I remember they'd be school groups from the U.S. would come in. I'd be seating people who were like, are you Jay Hogarth? And I'm like, yes, you're in J16.
Yeah.
It's right here. Here's the flashlight. And I got to wear a tux. That was kind of cool.
Nice.
Anyways. Good times. Yeah, no, but
good
it's true.
Times.
This is the real stuff. It's the real stuff.
It is?
Yeah. Cut to Spinner at the urinals. Mm-hmm. He tells Toby to stay away from Kendra or else. Mm-hmm. Physical consequences are implied here.
Yes. Well, first he has to make his presence known and get Toby to slowly understand that this girl that he's interested in shares a last name with him.
Right.
Why would that be?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Toby gulps.
I remember doing that scene, and because of Spinner's angle, which is so exposed.
It's really exposed
for Toby, who just has to stand there and continue looking forward while Spinner's towering over him. Was Toby actually able to pee? There's stage fright, right? And totally. Then you have a bully hovering over you and standing right there, like, angled in front of you. He was probably standing there for 20 minutes before a drip came up.
That's like me now, because I'm 42 next week. Okay. Terry tells Paige about Ashley's comment, but Paige is now fixated on the Sean date. If Ashley's moving on, she must not care.
Mm-hmm.
The gap widens.
Now, does Paige care about this because she wants to be right about Ashley, or
that's a really good question.
Is it genuine concern for Jimmy, or just wanting to be puppet master?
I mean, I personally lean towards the first one, because I think like confirmation bias is rewarded with a dopamine hit in the brain when somebody says something that you previously already thought could be true.
Mm-hmm.
And that confirms it. You get really excited. They're like, I know, totally, right? Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I don't think Paige is like has a Machiavellian plan. I think she wants to remain the it girl at the most. But I do think that this is proof that she was right, and that's a powerful feeling.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Especially for someone like Paige.
Yeah.
Who thinks that she's always right.
In science class again, they are learning about sublimation. Paige decides it's a metaphor for Ashley and Jimmy. Over a bubbling experiment.
It's dry ice. It's
dry ice.
Dry ice. Yeah. 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 I think this ice is going to, it will not become liquid. It will go straight from solid to vapor. That's your sublimation, Mike.
Okay. I didn't pay attention. See, Shane, in science class.
Ugh.
It's bubbling. The relationship is bubbling. It's a metaphor. Yeah. She drops the gossip bomb about Sean and Ashley to Jimmy. Mm-hmm. I'm of two minds on this. Telling somebody something that would hurt their feelings, passing on information that they know, gossip, is it okay? And this is a question for listeners. Is that okay? And would it be okay if you were doing it because they were your best friend and it was in their self-interest that you know something? Because I've experienced this in my real life. Where is that line?
I say yes. There are two camps in my mind. There's the ignorance is bliss and protect your friend, or tell your friend the hurtful thing, even if there's a short period of shoot the messenger. I feel like it's a betrayal. If you know something that could be very damaging to your friend and to insulate them from it, you let them find out for themselves, and then later on you fess up that you knew about that for a while. To me, yeah, that's not a characteristic. Exactly. That is a huge betrayal by a friend.
So the question here is Paige enough of a friend of Jimmy? Like, are they on that level? Is she good enough friends that she's going, hey, Jimmy, I need you to know this because I need you to protect yourself against this?
Well, we really have never established how tight of friends Paige and Jimmy are, but I think it's been known that that whole group is getting closer and closer, and they were doing a lot of hanging out and probably helping Jimmy through the, you know, the immediate after stages of the breakup during the summer. And Paige was probably there as a shoulder and helping put the pieces back together. So yeah. I would say that this would be warranted because she seems to be watching out for him the entire episode.
All right. Jimmy is not thrilled. Toby defies Spinner directly and talks to Kendra in the hallway. She wants to hang at lunch. He says yes, until he sees Spinner, aka Bigfoot.
Yeah.
And bails.
Spinner stands there in the back and crosses his arms. I had never been so self-conscious about crossing my arms because I had never thought about it before. And now I had to do it slowly on camera. And I remember thinking, like, how do you actually cross your arms? Am I doing it right? And if you see it, the way that they're crossed is like, there's like some weird, like this hand was out and like, no, you cross them like this.
No,
every
man,
time I cross my
just,
arms in this episode, it's weird.
I think you're noticing something.
I challenge the audience to go back and see what I mean. No one crosses their arms the way that Spinner crosses arms in that episode.
All right. We'll
and
take
I'm
a look.
Sorry.
We'll yeah. take a look. Well, Jimmy confronts Sean at his locker. Stay away from my girl, he says. Sean fires back. Just tells him straight up. Yeah. Well, guess what? We're going out Friday. Oof. It almost escalates until Craig breaks it up.
And then Jimmy gives Craig the most cockeyed stare down as he walks in front of him afterwards. I also just wanted to say about that last scene when Spinner shows up and Toby is trying to talk to Kendra, but the warning is at the forefront of his mind.
Ashley approaches Jimmy and he calls her the S word. Brutal.
Yeah.
He thinks they're still together. She doesn't. He accuses her of cheating again. Ashley realizes the whole school knows about the date now. I just don't understand how Jimmy thinks that they're I just don't understand this logic.
In that last scene too with Sean, he started the whole thing out by saying like, we're a thing again now, so you better back off. And that got Sean to say like, oh, you're a thing. Okay, I'll be sure to ask her about that when I take her out on Friday.
Yeah, shots fired.
But Ashley's reaction to being embarrassed like that in front of the whole class and I found that to be so, it was so well played on Melissa's part. She felt so small. Like, imagine your reputation is shot and now you're starting to build it back up a little bit and then you're called in front of everyone there and you have no retort and now you're just left in the middle of that class with all the eyes on you. Oh, fell for her there.
Brutal. And that word hits so hard. It's so shockingly out of place, and especially contextually just on the show. Like, we don't, you don't hear words like that. And I think Degrassi has always made a point of keeping language like that specific and necessary.
So yes, that
when
so
it
that
does
really
come
hits.
Out, yeah, feels extreme and you know,
yeah, you don't have listener fatigue because you're just hearing language like that all the time.
Totally. Photo day in the gym. Everyone's polished. Liberty looks sharp, casual, elite, which is what she was going for, she says. Emma tries to pump Toby up to talk to Kendra. He wants to live. Thank you very much.
Yeah. I think Toby said, like, yeah, her brother maims and murders, and JT's like, yeah, with his teeth. And then he just walks away. It was beautiful, beautiful. I cackled.
Yeah.
Well done. Well done, Ryan.
In the cafeteria, Paige blocks Ashley from sitting down. Full freeze out now. She's back to that. She gives Terry an ultimatum also. Sit with us and stay cool, or sit with Ashley and be out of the group.
Mm-hmm. Terry, I think, is finally had enough of Ashley's hot and cold and seeming to only need her when she's in need. Mm-hmm. But as soon as Ashley's back on top, Terry really feels like a distant second.
Absolutely. And like she's not being considered at all.
Right.
Because she really isn't. And this is Ashley's MO. She's really about Ashley.
You know, when Melissa started coming on in the earlier episodes and she was saying that Ashley is a very selfish, self-serving individual, I didn't see it. I'm starting to see it.
I think she's going to have some hard lessons learned, hopefully. Mm-hmm. There's some growth there. I'm not sure. I'm excited to find out. Toby finally talks to Kendra in the hallway. She knows he's scared of her brother. She's not into cowards, she says. I like her style. She walks away.
With Spinner behind the drapes or the blinds.
Spinner is always in the back of these scenes. Just
everyone gets to lurk eventually in Degrassi. It's in your contract.
I got to lurk. It's like, how many times do you lurk this season? Five?
3%
I got you 10. I got you 10 lurks.
Great agent.
That's our agent. Sean checks in about Friday's date with Ashley, but Ashley hesitates. She senses it's not about Jimmy. Is this about Paige? Ashley doesn't answer. She slumps down.
Yeah, to find Ellie also slumped.
Slumped already, pre-slumped.
Hard day, huh?
Hard day, basically. Silent witness energy happening here. Yeah. Then Toby rallies together. He works up the guts. He approaches Kendra in the hallway again, which is dangerous because Bigfoot's there. Spinner is lurking. And this time he doesn't back down. It's very tense. But Kendra is impressed that he would risk certain death.
Yes.
To ask her out on an ice cream date.
But I really love how it showed Spinner's influence on Kendra that they are brother and sister, where she says like, yeah, I'll rip out your bowels myself, Isaac.
Yes.
And it's like, okay.
I love that too. Cut from the same cloth.
Yes. That even if Spinner's not there to take care of her, she can definitely take care of herself.
Because. Exactly. And it just kind of shows like, oh, this is a whole family dynamic. They're like,
oh yeah.
They're kicking doors down and they're busting skulls.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Together.
That's right.
It's just kind of fun.
Bonnie and Clyde, sibling edition.
And I think Spinner does kind of know that she can handle herself.
And I think it's just, it's a really common thing to have happen. You see it with parents and their kids, especially, you know, fathers and daughters meeting a date for the first time. Mm-hmm. And it's just the grilling and like, okay, all right, you have my respect for now. But just know what happens if you mess this up. And nothing's going to happen anyway, but it's more just the, yeah, you got to show me what you're worth here. You don't just get invited in to this family dynamic here.
Yeah, I'm watching Love is Blind right now.
Yeah.
Can't wait till Wednesday. Yep. Then at photo day, Ashley flags down Terry. Terry's made her choice, obviously. She mm-hmm. stays with Paige and Hazel and the mm-hmm. rest of the crew. Which, ooh, yeah, this is Ashley's losing everybody again.
And you know that if you are low and then suddenly you're manically high and then you get dropped right back down to exactly where you were at the beginning of the rise, mm-hmm. it's going to feel that much worse because you thought you were done with it. And now it's even lower because mm-hmm. she doesn't even have Terry.
Yes. Yeah, she's completely by herself.
Completely by herself.
And now we get to the final scene. And maybe I think one of Degrassi's stroke of genius scripted moments, just this is not something I would think of as a scene, but it's quite powerful visually. Ashley gets called for her picture. Mm-hmm. The photographer hits her with the age-old and quite sexist line, "A pretty girl like you should never frown." Mm-hmm. Put a smile on your face.
Smile, smile, smile.
Classic low-grade sexism disguised as charm. She's visibly crying, and he's worried about how the picture's going to look. With tears streaming down Ashley's face, she forces him to take the picture, which is, there's a dignity in that. There's like, she's accepting her emotional state. And kind of accepting her fate. She's like, this is who I am right now.
Yeah. When picture. I look back in the yearbook, I will always remember.
It's, yeah, it's kind of fatalistic, but it's accepting of her. Like, it's kind of symbolic. Like, she's actually taking it on the chin. She's taking her, she's in a sense, she's accepting her fate here, I think.
I guess so. But even taking a step back and wondering if, so she doesn't take the picture. It's like she's not even there in the mm-hmm. yearbook looking back, or mm-hmm. she has to remember herself for that very moment, what she was going through. Still, like, such a film moment to be taking your school picture with a tear running down your face. I'm wondering if that has ever in the history of school pictures been done.
I don't know. I've never seen it. That's what I'm saying. Like, this seems like
use it. Yeah.
And this is before Photoshop, folks.
Oh, I think. This is real emotion right here. No, look, capture it.
Yeah. So yeah, on Ashley crying as the camera flashes, we freeze.
Yeah.
Don't quite know what to do if I was Ashley at this point.
No, this is what I start to do now. I watch once for notes, and then I watch once again unpaused
for pleasure,
just to really get into it.
Yeah, me too.
And you get to see a lot of things that you didn't quite realize the second time around. And Paige is so happy in a sadistic way when she gets to throw her arm around Terry. And she doesn't get to go there. Yeah. I'm a little surprised that Terry didn't give Ashley any sort of explanation, because in everything that we've seen, those two are pretty good at talking it out. Even if they don't see eye to eye at the end of it, Terry just abandons Ashley. And now you just have to deal with that.
That's just the last straw for her. You know, like, she's tried. I guess she's just so resolute in her decision. I don't know.
It didn't seem that resolute, though. It seem like she was very conflicted about what she was doing there?
It seemed like she was conflicted about showing Ashley in that moment because of what it might do to her. But I think the way I read her face, and it was very subtle, but there was a lot going on, was like, you made me do this.
Yeah, yeah.
I have no choice.
Yeah, so, you need this.
Good episode. Some great performances in there from especially from Melissa. She did such a fantastic job. Incredible arm cross folding from Shane there.
Leave something to be desired, but it was in the eyes.
Some great Toby moments, some great, I mean, everyone's just really good in this show at this point.
We didn't talk about like the death march, the war drums.
Toby's
walk up to Spinner, and also the high angle just to really to show the height differences, obviously, but also, you know, David taking on Goliath here.
I don't think you can get away with bringing in a music punchline as like a joke, unless you do it a couple times, or
yes.
I mean, three is usually the charm, but you want to establish that device, and they came back to it, and it delivered. I laughed.
JT had some incredible comedic moments in this episode too, when he kept using Sasquatch references with Spinner. But I also thought it was really great when Toby made the decision to walk over to Kendra while she was talking to Spinner, walking right into the lion's den. You see first his POV of Kendra and Spinner talking, and it looked like Kendra was tearing into Spinner for something. And it was such a, for me, such a beautiful moment that this tough guy in school that Toby is terrified of sees the girl that is his love interest just completely getting Spinner on his heels.
Yeah.
And he's almost there. Like, I know I messed up. I know.
Yeah. All these interrelational,
all the little relationships things. Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, we always love hearing from you guys. If you have any questions, comments, please email us dgradspodcast@gmail.com. We're also on Discord at Dgrads Alumni. So check us out there. We've got a nice burgeoning community. And we also have a Patreon account. We release these video episodes of the podcast early for you guys to watch. And we also do separate Q&A podcast directly for our Patreon, and we're very active on there. So let's get into a couple Discord questions, I guess.
Yeah.
Catherine25 on Discord says, what was it like filming the opening credits? I know you talked about your favorite ones, but I'd love to know about the actual experience of shooting them. Was it awkward, fun, etc.? When in the season would you do it? Did you get any input in what your character would be doing? Thanks so much for doing this pod. I grew up with TMG, same age as Emma's class. Thanks, Catherine25.
I remember two of them. And the two were, I think, Spinner in season 5, where he lost all his friends and they're all in the media immersion lab laughing, and then turns to the door and you just see Spinner looking on, and then, you know, sadly hanging his head and walking away. And then there was a cool one where I was playing the drums. This is when Stooges was in full swing, the band with Sav and Peter and Danny. And so we were performing in the classroom, and then it whips around to Shane Kipple on the drums. And I think I like pointed the stick at the camera and continued on. I was right in the heat of really trying to become a rock star offset at that point. So that was
alignment.
A lot of fun for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And obviously the very first one was so exciting because I was part of an opening credits on a TV show, and Spinner pushing Toby's face into the water fountain, and then whipping around, and Lauren Page just lowering her glasses and not impressed with what she saw. It's they were fun. They were fun. And it's also cool to know that every camera whip is a completely different scene. So they're all interconnected, but it's not one continuous shot. If anyone thought that it was, I don't know.
For me, the first time I appear on the show, I was just a peripheral character. I was just kind of coming in to cause trouble, say a bunch of horrible lines to somebody, and then walk off, you know, like, so season 4, when I think it was season 4, oh my God, fact check me on this, but when I got my first opening credit spot on the show, I was so freaking honored. Like, it was a big deal for me. I felt like, because I knew everybody already and I'd made friends, and it felt like I had been accepted into the family, you know? And so for me, it was like a badge of honor. And I remember shooting that, feeling so excited that I was, you know, like, it's crazy. It's wild to get an opening credit and be put in there among the cast. And I also remember the hat flip one specifically as well, which is later, because it's hard to do that, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I don't remember how many takes that took to get a hat coming directly at the lens, but frankly, it probably took 100. Yeah.
But it's true. You were like, you were the chef special. You were the soup of the day. And then you were so popular that suddenly these people come into the restaurant. Oh, it's on the menu now. It's on the actual menu.
I was on the menu. I was finally on the menu. I finally made it. It was so great.
Well,
thanks
done.
For that, Catherine 25.
Go.
All right. So Gertie the Dino. Hi, Gertie. How are you?
Gertie.
Random question. She says, random question about your approach to rewatching, or in some cases watching for the first time, episodes. Do you read anything about the plot or the episode before watching it, or do you go into it with as little of a refresher as possible?
I don't read anything about the plot of the episode, aside from the notes that I take with the who did the story, the episode number, episode title, director. I watched through the episode. At the beginning, I was watching through and pausing scene by scene and then taking my notes. Now I do that, and then I watch the episode again so I could really, you know, fill in all those little nice moments that I might have missed because I was just back and forth to note-taking. But yeah, that's it. And I think you're the same, Mike. It's usually like the hour leading up to the podcast, so it's as fresh in my mind as it could possibly be. How about you?
Yeah,
I actually haven't asked you how you do it.
I'm the same way. I don't want to see anything beforehand. I want to be really, really surprised. And usually my first watch, I'm just watching it to process the episode because I want that initial immediate reaction. Any surprise moments I'll write down the first time. But essentially, I'm going in completely blind. I don't even read the synopsis. I go to the episode, I hit play, and then I make my popcorn.
It's almost like the podcast then becomes an immediate, like an after show.
It is. It's an after show of a show that aired 15 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally.
If it was coming out on a weekly basis, on air, the way it did 25 years ago, then this would be the after show, like, you know, Survivor or Bachelor or something. Yeah.
Thanks again for joining us on this special ride. We are well into season two now. And just thanks for being here.
And once again, thank you so much for coming back every week. Now, sad to say, unfortunately, Mike and I will be taking 1 week off. Life gets in the way sometimes. Mike has some pretty exciting news for the reason why.
I can announce it because it was just announced last night. My film, Don't Come Upstairs, my documentary, will be having its world premiere next week in Greece at the Thessaloniki International Documentary Film Festival. So excited about that. So I'll be there. But we'll be right back to it after that.
So good luck, Mike. And
thanks,
we're very proud of you for that.
Thank you.
The boy becoming a man. and you get to go to Greece, which I've never been to, which is amazing. Absence makes the heart grow fonder. So thank you very much for listening to another episode of the D-Grads podcast with Shane Kipple and Michael Bell. And we will see you in 2 weeks.
Do I just keep waving?